Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the new screensavers is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
The new screensavers is brought to you by Jira Service Desk from Atlassian. Jira Service Desk delivers everything your IT team needs out of the box at a cost-effective price. For a free trial of Jira Service Desk, visit Atlassian.com/twit. And by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to 100-plus job sites, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/twit. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage process into the 21st century with a fast, easy, and completely online process. Check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/MSS.
A meatless burger for the masses, deleting Yahoo and three Android phones go head-to-head. Live from the Twit Eastside Studios in beautiful Petaluma, it's the new Screensavers.
Welcome to the new Screensavers. Leo Laporte here. Ian Thompson there. Welcome back.
Always a pleasure.
Episode 75 for October 15th, 2016. And thanks to this is my counterpart down under. Not you.
Okay.
That's not dirty,
okay.
No, Richard from Adelaide is the Adelaide Tech Guy. AdelaideTechGuy.com.au. There he is. He has his radio shows on 9 stations.
Oh, nice.
In Australia, including Hobart, Tasmania, and all over New South Wales, I'm sure. And it's great to have you, Richard. Thanks for stopping by. He did that quite professionally.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
clearly.
No. It's good that you're actually getting on and not suing each other for breach of copyright or something, you know?
Adelaide Tech Guy. No, I'm thrilled. I think that's awesome. Hey, we've got a great show coming up for you today. Adelaide Tech Guy was not lying when he said Megan has a new burger that's supposed to look, feel, and taste like a real beef burger, but it's not.
I don't know. I've got my doubts on this one.
It's a vegan burger that actually runs down your chin. My mouth is watering. Micah Sargent will join us. He's from iMore. Mm-hmm. He's the only guy in the world who knows how to delete your Yahoo account. There is no button that says delete my account.
You know? Oh, no. And this week it was made a lot harder as well, although
they backed down. At first they said, oh, no, we're not going to forward email anymore.
Yeah.
So if you deleted your account, if you had a Yahoo Mail account that you used, nobody would be able to get your... But they put that back on. So that was a mistake.
Oh, it was the weakest of excuses possible. It was painfully bad.
We have three new inexpensive Android phones. You know what? I got such sticker shock. Google had its announcement October 4th. I was still on the plane during the announcement. I got off the plane. First thing I do, fire up the computer and watch the YouTube. And when they announced the price of the Pixel, my jaw hit the floor. I thought, that's ridiculous to charge effectively Note 7 or iPhone 7 prices.
Particularly as the Nexus was always so cheap. You know, I mean, that was one of the things about the Nexus was that it was a very low-cost platform. But now they've gone premium on us.
Crazy. So can you get a good Android phone for less, half as much as a Pixel? Jason Howell will show us three candidates and tell us what he thinks. Ron Richards has a great tip for Gmail users. We're going to take a call for help. We got lots more coming up. This was a big week, though. You know, you cover the news for the Register.
Mm.
So what was your big story besides the one about what was it?
The
meatless burger?
The Soylent's... Soylent's farting recall.
Yeah.
Yes.
Besides that... Because I drink Soylent. I drink that. It's a meal replacement. I don't know, because it's made of people. I don't know, because it seems like a good idea.
But think of all the wonderful foods that you could be eating.
No, that's... I've been eating too much
down this gut
of the wonderful foods.
Well,
I'm
trying to... but I mean, it just...
Anyway,
baffles me.
I actually kind of like it, although I know I'm weird. It's made out of a lot of stuff besides soybeans, not just soy milk. It's got algae and stuff anyway. Yeah. So I'll be interested in this burger. We'll find out more about it. And I'm not going to eat the bars.
No.
I don't need gastro upset.
No.
But exactly. I'll tell you what I thought. I thought the interesting story was Twitter. Because initially Twitter said, and there was a little debate, I think Ev Williams wanted to sell it. The current CEO, Ev Williams, mm-hmm. the founder, the current yeah. CEO, Jack Dorsey, also a founder, did not want to sell it. Ev apparently won. The board wants to sell it. They shopped it around. Google said no. Disney said no. Verizon probably said no. Verizon
Verizon's
buys
still
everything.
Being burnt from Yahoo.
Well, it's not to Verizon. They'll buy anything. And then the last man standing was Salesforce. Mark Benioff started getting emails from shareholders saying, mm-hmm. And eventually he this week said, nope, we're not buying Twitter. So now what?
Well, I never understood the Salesforce position because, I mean, what on earth were they supposed to be getting from Twitter? I mean, there's an access to the data streams, obviously. But, you know, for the kind of money they were asking, it just wouldn't have made financial sense. I mean, right now, we're up to the stage where on Friday we put out a tweet saying we're definitely not buying Twitter.
The Register's yeah. not buying Twitter.
It's just... I think we were discussing this earlier, and I think you're on the you got it right on this one, which is they're going to wait. People are going to wait until the share price just crashes through the floor, and then scoop it up cheap.
Yeah,
because they were asking initially $30 billion for it.
That's
$30 billion for a firm which has never made a profit, can't make a profit even with its founder still running it. You've got to wonder.
One hedge fund manager said, in order to make Twitter work, you'd have to cut about half. $1 billion in costs.
Yeah.
That means massive firings. No company with a public face is going to want to do that.
Yeah.
So who will buy Twitter? Probably some investment group that has the willingness to do what needs to be done, which is fire a mass
yes.
number of employees, cut way back on a lot of things. Because Twitter does have revenue, a couple of $1 billion revenue.
It does. It does. I mean, they've got a big salary bill.
Right.
They pay their engineers an awful lot.
Right.
They've built this luxurious headquarters and civic center.
There's fat to be cut.
Oh, there's an awful lot of fat to be cut. What I worry
about... I think they're close to a good monetization strategy. I mean, I think people are going to be watching the elections on Twitter. They watched the debates on Twitter. Because you want, you know, to watch and tweet. And so I think that there is... lots of potential in that company.
Yeah, up to a point. I mean, my worry is what we've seen with Twitter users when they tried, when they were talking about extending the 140-character limit, when they were talking about organizing on a timeline basis rather than a raw stream of data, users got really, really annoyed about that. And I think it's important that if you're going to keep the users, you've got to keep in tune with what they want. Now, what I think is going to happen is a hedge fund or a private investor will buy it, make all these changes, drive users away, and drive Twitter into the ground. That's my quick prediction.
How long will that take?
Give it a couple of years.
And it's no more Twitter?
Yeah.
Wow.
But, I mean, on the data side of things, it's not even that valuable because, yes, it builds up. You get a good amount of personal information. But compared to the personal information that Google or Facebook has on you, then it's nowhere near as in-depth. So we'll see. We'll see.
Did you see one of the other big stories, of course, the continuing saga of the Galaxy Note 7? A couple of things. The latest, of course, the replacement phones we knew were starting to cause mm-hmm. problems. A good number of them have blown up. The FAA, in conjunction with the Transportation Administration, yeah. have said, they declared as of noon today, you may not take a Note 7 on an airplane. You may not take it in your check luggage. You may not take it in your pocket. And if we find one in your pocket, you can't take it out and put it in the seat back or up. You have to carry it in your pocket so you'll know if it's going to explode ahead of time. It's just crazy. Samsung has decided not to make the phone anymore. That's
yeah.
it. No more replacements. They've been really generous trying to keep people in the Samsung family, saying we'll give you $100 credit if you buy another Samsung phone. I don't know if that's going to be enough to save Samsung. Great article by Brian X. Chen.
Oh, the money quote, yes.
Yeah, and Choi Sang-hun in the international business section of the New York Times, why Samsung abandoned the phone. The thesis is that they released it fast to get it out before the iPhone 7, and that it was so complex, they don't really know what's going on. Park Chul-hwan, who's a former director of the Center for Advanced Batteries at the Korean Electronics Technology Institute, said Samsung was too quick to blame the batteries. I think there was nothing wrong with them, or they were not the main problem. But here's the money quote. The problem seems to be far more complex, said Mr. Park. The Note 7 had more features and was more complex than any other phone manufactured. In a race to surpass the iPhone, Samsung I love this, seems to have packed it with so much innovation, it became uncontrollable. In other words, no one knows what's going on. No one ever will. We're just going to stop making it.
Well, we don't
understand it.
This is the bizarre thing, though, because when it comes to product recalls, you've got one chance to get it right. And if the product you're replacing has the same fault, that's it. That's game over. So what they were thinking in releasing this early, I'm just baffled by it. I mean, you'd think somebody at Samsung Engineering would have said, look, guys, give us a week to sort out exactly what the problem is, then we can do this. So,
did you see that somebody is streaming a live stream? They kept their Note 7, they plugged it in, and they've got a camera pointed at it, and they're streaming live. Now, I admit it's not as cool as watching Shina Ibu puppies, but they're streaming it live, hoping it will blow up on live camera.
You see, if they're smart, they could run a sweepstake on it and actually coin it in.
You can make money on it.
Yeah, place $1 on your bet as to when this phone's going to ignite. And, you know,
that's kind of the sad thing, because the chances are good, like 30,000 to 1, that it will never blow up.
Exactly.
It's only a fraction of all the phones. It's a large enough fraction that Samsung did the right thing.
Yeah, but, you know, I keep my phone generally in my front pocket if I'm commuting, and so the idea of that suddenly exploding and it's kind of like...
Yeah, you don't want a thigh burn.
I know. Well, it's not so much the thighs I'm worried about. It's the possibility of having children. But no, it's just...
Finally, a surprise. I've always thought of Walt Mossberg as a real Apple fan. Some would say a fanboy. He has written critical articles about
Occasionally.
Very rarely. But today he published an article, actually October 12th, a few days ago, in Recode, that was really fairly scathing about Siri. Why does Siri seem so dumb, Walsberg asks. And if it doesn't get smarter soon, what does it mean for Apple? He said, and I remember this, back in 2009, he met the original Siri makers. They were purchased later by Apple.
And now been purchased by Samsung.
Yeah.
So they
went on to do Viv.ai.
That's right.
And Viv just got acquired by Samsung. But the funny thing is the original Siri app had more capabilities than Apple's Siri. I think the problem is that Apple has chosen privacy. And it's hard to do all of that artificial intelligence. You can't do machine learning without a lot of data. And companies like Facebook and Google and even Microsoft and Amazon are willing to mine our data and get smarter machines.
Right.
Apple has always said, no, we don't want to do that. I think that might be what's holding Siri back.
I like the theory. It's got to be said. I mean, I just presume that as Apple has done time and time again, it took its eye off the ball. The last 5 years, we've seen very little in the way of concrete innovation by Apple in pretty much any area.
Right. You think Apple is itself losing?
They haven't got a
mojo.
I think at the moment they've let Johnny Ive go a bit wild, which is why you got the fiasco of the watch. Tim Cook is a very good operator. He's very good at keeping controls of costs, and you know, he's a good manager, but he's not an innovator. He's not somebody with the vision that Steve Jobs had to create entirely new lines of products and then to nurture those and to develop them and to make them better. And I dislike Steve Jobs an awful lot, but he was very good at that.
Maybe, I know a guy who seems to know a lot about artificial intelligence who's going to be out of work in January. Maybe they could hire him, Barack Obama. Did you see Obama's...
No, they couldn't afford it.
First of all, Obama's going to take over as guest editor at Wired, right?
Yeah.
But they had a great interview with Joey Ito of the Media Lab and President Obama, in which he showed really kind of remarkable understanding. I'm sure he was
I was going to say, he must have advised. Got a great briefing on this one.
But he did a great job talking about artificial intelligence, neural nets, autonomous vehicles, and the future of the world. It was a really interesting...
Yeah, I think reading that piece, it was kind of like, A, you need to read some better science fiction writers, because if he said, you know, the future of the AI is either they keep us drugged or they kill us, and it's just like, no, there is coexistence. Read some Ian Banks, the Culture series. You'll get the good stuff there. But surprisingly nuanced interview. Really encouraging to see that he understood the importance of fundamental scientific research with no commercial goal. And separated, you know, basic research and applied research. Both are very important. He seemed very switched on, but you do wonder how much of this is him, what he knows, and how much is what he's been briefed on.
At this point, even somebody who could attend a briefing, understand the briefing, and then regurgitate the information seems pretty darn good. That's a I'd like, even that would be nice.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
You
know
where
I'm
going
here.
Unless it's the best briefing ever, then, you know, what can you do? It's, yeah, it's going to be fun in the next.
You know, I've not, I have had mixed feelings in the last 8 years over President Obama, but I think he's going to be missed, I have to say.
Yes.
Joining us right now from iMore.com, senior editor Micah Sargent. He's on the Skype horn. Hi, Micah.
Hello, Leo. How are you?
So we thought we'd get you on because you're the only person in the world who seems to know how to delete a Yahoo account.
It's true. Yeah, it's not easy.
So we'll tell you why. If you haven't been paying attention, Yahoo was hacked. The weird thing is apparently 4 years ago it was hacked and half a billion user accounts stolen. Including, yes, hashed passwords, although we don't know how well hashed or if they were salted.
It's partially, yeah.
And at least some in the clear security questions, which this is all terrifying. And, of course, email addresses and a lot more. So problem one is when did they know about this? And there's some evidence that Marissa Meyer, in fact, did know about it months before she revealed it.
Exactly, which
because they wanted to
charges.
They wanted to preserve the sale, you know, process. In fact, Verizon's saying, we think this is a material...
they're asking for at least $1 billion off.
Yeah, and I think they could even get out of the purchase if they wanted to. They're going to get a good discount. They're going to get a good price on it. And then, of course, there's the second issue, which is after... Now, Yahoo, to their credit, Yahoo has
gone... That's not a phrase you hear very often.
Yeah. To their discredit, many years ago, they gave up two Chinese dissidents to the Chinese government.
10 years in a work camp,
But to their credit, a couple of times they've fought national security letters. They've fought and lost national security letters, asking them for information about Yahoo subscribers. The problem is the most recent national security letter, at least that we know about, they didn't fight. I guess they thought, well, why bother?
Well, they not only didn't fight, they went above and beyond what you would normally expect. We asked Google and Facebook, would you get involved with this? And Google were just like... Two words, no way, never going to happen.
And they even misrepresented that because at first they gave the impression, the government was looking for some mail that has a specific signature. We just modified our spam filter. It's already looking for that kind of thing. And it turned out, no. In fact, without the knowledge or permission of the Yahoo security team, others at Yahoo wrote what was effectively a rootkit.
Yeah.
And really snooped on Yahoo users, potentially putting all Yahoo users at risk.
And their content, yes.
At this point, most people are going, I'm done. I don't need that Yahoo Mail account anymore. I don't trust these guys. But if you go to the site and say, where's the delete my account button? Nothing there.
Not
so what did you do, Micah?
Yeah. So there is a page, surprise, but I could not find it by searching through Yahoo. So what you're going to do is we're going to include this link in the show notes, and you can do some Google searching to find this as well. But there's a site that you go to, and it is basically your terminating your Yahoo account page. Okay, so you go here, and they give you this long preamble, and then they give you a CAPTCHA at the bottom, of course, because most people can't type those in right the first time. So then it's like one more chance to get you to stay. But you confirm your identity with your password on the site. You type in that CAPTCHA, and then you say, yes, I want to terminate my account, at which point it gives you a confirmation and says, your account's terminated, but by the way, there's going to be some information that might stick around for about 3 years. We might have some that sticks around for about 90 days, if not more. There will be some that won't fully get deleted. It's gone but not forgotten is what it is.
Holy cow.
So is there a way to actually delete your account, but if somebody hasn't got the message and still sends you an email to that email, it will automatically get forwarded on?
Well, it takes a while for the process to go through and shut down. I think your best bet when it comes to that, because what it looks like is Yahoo is not trying to be incredibly helpful as you kind of terminate your account. There is a way, you were talking about earlier, to forward your email. So while the account is still alive and active, you can go ahead and forward your email to something like Gmail or set up like a vacation responder, which are settings that are all available in the settings portion of your Yahoo Mail account.
And just to be complete, I would say, and we talked to Steve Gibson, our security guy, about this on Tuesday, that maybe the better thing is not to delete your Yahoo account, because remember, you may have accounts with other services that you've used the Yahoo email as your recovery email. You can't remember that. It would be better to keep that account alive and just bleach
it. Everything in it.
Everything out of personal information. And by the way, Yahoo has even said, we will reclaim email addresses that are unused. So periodically, every month or so, just send yourself an email from the Yahoo account just to keep it alive. I think that might be the more prudent thing, because you don't want somebody else to get your Yahoo email address. My address is leolaporte@yahoo.com. That would be an easy address to guess.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't want anybody else to get that email address.
That is the point. Yeah, you do want, it's kind of like URL squatting. You don't want anyone else to get your Yahoo account and then impersonate you.
I learned that in the early days when I deleted my Twitter account.
Right.
And fortunately, Twitter was still so small, I was able to get my name back. But I realized that was a mistake. If you're not going to use Twitter, don't delete your account. Just don't
leave
it use
dormant.
It. Yeah, right. So, Micah, well, thank you for doing the research.
No, excellent stuff.
Finding a way to do this. And we'll put a link to your iMore article, How to Delete Your Yahoo Data and Shut Down Your Account. You've got the whole step-by-step in the link.
That was also one of the nastiest captures I've seen.
Isn't that a bad capture?
Yeah, it's terrible.
Just like intentionally almost designed just to make it really awkward to get it, to get it right. It was, what with that and the email forwarding, then they're really making an effort to keep people in through inertia, I think.
Also keep in mind when you delete your Yahoo account, this is ridiculous.
I don't look at it.
I'm being queasy. I think in the background it says, give Marissa Meyer her severance. Give Marissa Meyer her severance. You will not only use your Yahoo Mail, but you're going to lose everything associated with that account, which would be including Flickr, which I still use, so I wasn't really willing to get rid of that.
Fashion thing. Okay.
I like Flickr.
GeoCities, if you have that.
My GeoCities page, I never want to lose that.
Oh, good grief.
There's a Yahoo briefcase. There's Hot Jobs. There's Address Book. There's a lot of little Yahoo things you may not remember that those are Yahoo. Flickr would be the big one for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you delete your account, Micah, or do you...
Yeah, well, see, I was going to touch on that briefly. There, when I was a lot younger, I had an account, an email account at Yahoo, and I was actually able to reclaim that account for the sake of being able to do this, the actual deletion process. So, yeah, they don't hold on to those for very long before they decide to kind of give them back out. So I reclaimed that one, and I deleted that.
Oh, you reclaimed it just by signing up with it?
Yes, yes, yes.
Oh.
I know. And the thing is when I was younger, I would have done a bunch of different online games and stuff like that. So I could have, you know, someone else could have grabbed that in theory and gone through and gotten the passwords. But I do. I recommend if you have a Flickr account or you have passwords linked up or accounts rather linked up to your Yahoo account, it's not your best bet to go through and do this termination process. Not only because ultimately Yahoo is saying you don't have control of a lot of the data, they're going to keep it around, but also because someone else could then get your email address and possibly go through and do the reset password stuff.
Precisely.
Yeah. That is that is something I hadn't considered.
What I did is I changed my Yahoo password, and then I turned on two-factor authentication, which Yahoo does now have. And I figured that's going to protect me. You know, there's been a data dump, but there's nothing I could do about the data dump. That information's already out there. So, you know, deleting your account or not is not going to change that.
Besides, if you've done nothing wrong, there's nothing to fear. That's what they keep telling us.
But who among us has done nothing wrong?
Micah
Sargent, senior editor at iMore. Hey, thank you, Micah. Great to have you on.
Cheers, Mike.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it. Coming up, we're going to have Megan Maroney. She's going to talk to us. She's actually eaten the burger, but she didn't. She wouldn't drink the blood. Becky Worley drank the blood. engineered in a Silicon Valley lab. I know, it's disgusting. I know. But now we know why she stays so young. That's coming up in just a little bit.
I thought there was a picture of her in the attic that just never...
Becky has not aged since we worked with her at Tech TV 20 years ago. Amazing. almost 20 years ago. Our show today brought to you by, oh, a nice product from Atlassian. We are big Atlassian fans. We use Atlassian like crazy. We use Jira, which is a great development tool. We use HipChat to stay in communication. We have many, many HipChat rooms. Different members of the staff use sales, engineering, production. But we also are using a new service from Atlassian I'm very excited about called the Jira Service Desk. If you use Jira, you know, if you were an Agile user and you've used Jira, nice Australian company, by the way, Atlassian, you will love this Jira Service Desk. It's a service management tool IT teams will use to keep on track with everything they do. And it starts at $10 a month. You get customers an easy way to ask you for help. So it's a service desk in that respect. You'll stay on top of things like service level agreements, dynamic queues, mobile alerts. Will keep your agents productive, help you not have to put out fires, but just get stuff done in a timely, sensible way. Automate repetitive tasks so your agents can focus on the important stuff. This is awesome. You can group customers so you can filter queues and customize service level agreements, pull reports by organization. So it's great for supporting external teams. And if you want to use customer feedback to guide product development, there's tools there too. The emails from your customers can be branded and customized. You can set up schedules and rules to control when and how the emails are sent. You can easily integrate the service desk with Confluence. We've been using that for a long time now to build a support knowledge base so your team can provide quick and easy support to customer requests. Our IT department is using Jira Service Desk now to track projects and tasks. They're able to use swim lanes for the Kanban board. That's really awesome. You could see what it's like if you go right now to Atlassian, Atlassian.com/twit, and find out more about it. And, of course, it integrates beautifully with all their other products like HipChat. Notifications from Service Desk come through HipChat and vice versa. For a free trial, Atlassian.com/twit. And if you get there right now, you get that free T-shirt. It's like up, up, down, down, left, right, AB for your, you know that, the Konami code.
Yes, exactly, the Konami code.
Konami code for your IT team. Atlassian.com. That's a great T-shirt. Atlassian.com/twit. That'll be yours free, but only for the first 100 signups. So get there right now. We're going to talk to Megan in just a bit. But first, remember I was talking about how expensive the Pixel was. There are some alternatives. From All About Android and TNT, Jason Howell takes a look at three of the best.
Hey, I'm Jason Howell, and I'm here with not one, not two, but three $400 Android devices. It's a very competitive price point for Android devices. So let's take a look at three of them and see which is the best if you've got $400 burning a hole in your pocket. First, we're going to take a look at the Honor 8, the Huawei Honor 8. As you can see, it has a fingerprint sensor on the back. That actually doubles as a multifunction button. You can assign it when you press that fingerprint sensor, which is nice. It has an IR blaster up at the very top. That's that sensor right there. So you can control all of your home, entertainment, and media stuff. And it has an all-glass design, which makes it kind of a little bit more premium than you might find. That has a downside, though. Some of the cons here, you can see it's already cracked because it's slippery. It's sitting on a table and it just kind of moves across the table and it can fall off. So keep that in mind. Also, the software that ships with this and some of the bloatware is kind of yucky. I actually replaced it with the Google Now launcher, so you're not seeing it here. I'd say this is the better bet. And it's GSM only, which means AT&T and T-Mobile, no Verizon, and no Sprint. Next up, we have the ZTE Axon 7. And as you can see, very different design quality here. It's a aluminum body, which is super durable, feels really tight. It has audio features in here designed for audiophiles, so lossless audio support, hi-fi audio chips, and Dolby Atmos surround sound for the front-facing speakers. That sounds really nice. And finally, it has a Quad HD AMOLED display. It's super sharp to the eye, looks really nice. On the downside, I found the fingerprint sensor on the back to be somewhat finicky. You had to push it four or five times in order to get it to match up. Nav buttons down here are actually not backlit. Therefore, if you're in a dark room, you don't see those at all, and they're really hard to find. And finally, CDMA support is included here, so GSM and CDMA. But for Verizon, you're stuck on roaming, which is kind of a bug that Verizon's been working on and has not been able to fix yet. So keep that in mind. Finally, we have the OnePlus 3, and this is just such a great phone. Design is premium. It feels super slick and nice in your hand, a nice aluminum body here. top-notch performance with a Snapdragon 820 processor, which is good. If it was just that, that would be good. But it also has 6 gigs of RAM, which makes this a screaming beast. That is like high-end specs there. And it has an excellent camera on board, so you can take some really, really sharp pictures with the OnePlus 3. On the downside, it is only GSM only, so AT&T and T-Mobile, no Verizon or Sprint. No micro SD card slot if you want to expand the internal storage. Both of these other phones have that. And finally, dash charging is what OnePlus calls it. It's the fast charging, and it's only happens if you happen to use the charging brick and cable that were included with the OnePlus 3. So that could limit you. So overall, you've got some really great options here. The Honor 8, fantastic. If design is your focus and you want something that looks sharp, ZTE Axon is great for audiophiles. And finally, the OnePlus 3 is a workhorse if performance is your preference. And if I had to pick just one of these devices to be the one that I would live with for the rest of my life, snuggle up to at night, it would have to be the OnePlus 3. I love this device. It's such a fantastic device. From the use to the just the hand feel and the display, everything about it is great. For $400, you can't beat it. You can find me all over the network talking tech with Tech News Today, all about Android and Android App Arena. Thanks for watching, you guys.
Thank you, Jason Howell from TNT and all About Android. I have all three phones here. Actually, I don't know why, but I also have the OnePlus 3 and the Axon at home. I keep gravitating to the Axon. As far as how it feels in your hand, this is so solid, and I didn't have the same problems with the fingerprint reader that Jason had. I really like the 7. Although... although the OnePlus 3, a lot of people are saying good things about how OnePlus has kept us up to date. And that's a big issue with any third-party Android phone is the updates. None of these companies have agreed to take the automatic monthly updates from Google. But the OnePlus 3 has been updated very regularly with
that's
its
good.
Oxygen
that's
OS.
That's
going
to be a very selling clean. Point for phones going into the future.
I guess Jason's probably right that the OnePlus 3 is the one to get, unlockable and all of that. But at least
it doesn't
for
have a fingerprint sensor.
Yeah, it does. It's weird, though. It's on the on-off switch.
Sad.
It's
oh,
a
that's
sneaky.
Bizarre.
It's a sneaky. Actually, that's not it, but it's a sneaky fingerprint sensor, yeah.
Oh,
isn't that weird?
That's rather cunning.
Yeah, it's rather cunning. Mm-hmm. And this is the only one... And I think this is a good selling point of certainly the iPhone, of the physical silence switch. This actually has 3 settings, just as Android does, which is all off, priority only, and all on. That is kind of nice, even though it's upside down. You would think that all on would be up and all off would be down, but it's the other way around.
Physical setting,
physical
switches.
Button.
It's so 1990s.
No, but I it's BlackBerry, right? But yeah. I really like that part of the...
Aren't you worried, though,
that
if you stick it in your pocket, the button on the side is going to slide up?
Not this. Go ahead. You can try it and see.
You can take that one home. Jason has.
Probably can. Like, Jason seems
actually,
to have a few
it's,
phones.
It's fairly stiff. I'll give it that.
Actually, I really like the OnePlus 3, but like I said, I keep gravitating towards the Axon 7 for some reason.
Yeah.
It's front piece and speakers are a big selling point for me.
And that's a nice wide screen as
it's
well.
It's also, it feels a little bit bigger, yeah.
You see, I reviewed the Honor 8, and one of my beefs with it was that it was too narrow and the screen
it's
area was too
it's a smaller phone,
limited.
Isn't it? Yeah. The other problem is, look at the back. Jason's already cracked it here and here.
I was surprised, because I actually threw mine up into the air and down onto carpet, and I couldn't break it.
This is like the Samsung Galaxy S7, which has the same kind of mirror finish. I think the varnish is very fragile on these.
Well, I was at the launch of that and California Academy of Sciences, and they made such a big deal about the layering on the back, how it changed color when you looked at
different
light forms.
Samsung did the
it's
same
like,
thing.
It's the back of a phone, but apparently the back of the phone is a huge selling point in Asia.
And this has 2 lenses, like the iPhone 7, right?
Yeah, and great photos.
Yeah. That's one thing the Axon maybe isn't great as a camera.
And it also has a multifunction fingerprint sensor, so you can use it to click and launch apps.
You can actually push it.
Yeah.
It goes in, unlike
the
Axon. Anyway.
Do you like that on the back, the fingerprint sensor on the back?
I do. It's a natural place to pick it up.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even bother switching it
on. The only negative is you can't unlock it if it's on the desk. You have to pick it up, unlock it, and put it on.
Yeah.
I don't like having a physical button in that.
What about a case? Like, how do you unlock it when the cases have a hole in it?
Well, you can't put a case without a hole in it.
You get the case with a hole in it.
Actually, that's a selling point on this. It comes with a case in the box.
Oh. Yeah.
It's a cheap case, but it's one of those rubber...
I've never understood people who use smartphones and don't put cases on them. I mean, it's just... You've got a $700 or $500 piece of kit, and you're not going to spend $20 just to make sure it survives. I mean, it's like... I don't use the case on my.
I decided to stop using the case on my iPhone 7. It's too pretty. I have the nice shiny one.
But then you break it.
No, I will not break it.
I shall hold you to that.
I will not break it. Hey, let's talk a little bit about food.
Let's talk a little bit about food.
Megan Maroney, you did something crazy.
I did. We went to...
By the way, we've been just talking and Megan just showed up. I apologize. It's like...
Wanted someone to talk about Android.
You're always here anyway. Right, you're always here anyway. Megan Maroney is here. She's the host of Tech News Today with Jason Howell and, of course, iOS Today, our iOS show. But we sent you on a mission because you're a pescatarian.
I am, yes. I don't eat red meat. And not because... I mean, I like animals, but mostly it's just the damage to the environment that's so much consumption of meat does, like how much water a cow takes, how much grain a cow takes, you know, and chickens as well. So, yeah, I was really interested in this lab-grown meat. It sounds gross, but, I mean, doesn't it also sound gross that we're, like, you know, using a cow to make meat?
I was
going to
say, go into the average slaughterhouse and you'll
come
out.
That's a little grosser, isn't it? I don't want to think about that.
Yes, but the tech industry is really fascinated by this for a lot of reasons. Like, the Impossible Foods has a... Google Ventures has invested in them. Bill Gates has invested in them. And if you think about it, it makes sense because, you know, all these people are very forward looking, right? Like, so what's it going to be like in 50 years, you know, when we're not driving our own cars and, you know, when robots have your job? And so, yeah, I think that we also will not have cows if we eat them at the rate that
we're eating. Be good for global warming as well, right?
Yeah.
It will eliminate the essential country sport of cow tipping, I understand. But, you know,
that's
robot
me. Don't
cow
do
tipping.
That. Yeah. Don't do robot that. Robot cow cows are fun to tip. So, by the way, Elon Musk's brother says that food is the next big venture opportunity. So this is going to be one to watch. We sent Megan down to test the Impossible Burger. Watch.
In San Francisco for the West Coast launch of the Impossible Foods burger. Now, Silicon Valley folk are always talking about how they are going to change the world. That's what Impossible Foods says, too. Let's see if they can do it with the burger that is not made from a cow.
Impossible Foods' mission is to replace animals as the system that we use to produce meat across the board globally with a much more sustainable system that makes more nutritious, safer, healthier, more delicious foods for the world.
We just heard the speech about what it was. It's uncompromisingly delicious food. How would you describe this, other than that, this burger that's not made from cows?
The Impossible Burger was first made for the love of meat. And our target is to focus on people who crave a delicious burger.
This is the first burger I've eaten in almost a decade. I eat a lot of veggie burgers, and this tastes way better. It tastes like a cow. I'm not being pumped, am I?
The Impossible Burger has this thing called legume hemoglobin in it. It's the building block of life that we found in a plant, and we produce at a scale that uses a fraction of our resources. Turns out heme is this catalyst that when you cook it, it makes meat like beef taste like beef, as you see in the Impossible Burger. But it's also the reason why we think chicken tastes like chicken and fish tastes like fish.
They mix the burger in front of me. My senses just became overloaded. I could smell meat, all those amino acids and the heme, and once it's getting put together, that's what I'm smelling, and it gave me an olfactory sense, which is you tingle and you crave it.
You have some competitors out there. Beyond Meat just got investment from Tyson Foods, but they have kind of a different mission than you do. You guys are starting in restaurants. Explain why you're how you're different than Beyond Meat.
One of the big differences is our product, when it's raw, can be picked by a world-class chef like Chris Cosentino, Tracy Desjardins, Tal Ronan. They can turn it into tartare or meatloaf or a burger.
Impossible tackled every aspect of a burger. The aroma, the texture, the visual.
The way it worked, the way it tasted, we tried it rare, we tried it medium rare. It's incredible to me that you can take this burger and you can cook it.
I also think our go-to-market strategy is very different. When you have our product, you can establish credibility with the meat-eating target with world-class chefs who will only put on their menu something that they will stand behind, as you saw today.
I'm always really mindful about sustainability and wanting to know where my products come from and that they're obviously delicious, but that there's also a consciousness about what the impact is from an environmental standpoint.
The last part of it is, in order to really have a big impact on the mission, you have to attract the meat eater. Like me, I'm a meat eater. And I think the bar is high. I think meat eaters, when they bite into a juicy burger, either feel like, wow, that's delicious, or not.
That is good.
I've served it to some pretty meaty chefs in LA, and
They're just blown away.
This is great. You're in high-end restaurants. This is wonderful. I mean, I'm definitely thinking, like, these will be restaurants I would go to just to have this burger. But what about for the rest of the people? You know, people complain a lot, like, oh, yes, if everyone could shop at Whole Foods, wouldn't it be wonderful? But, every family can't afford. What's getting in the way of getting it to the rest of people?
We need to ramp up our supply. And that is part of our challenge. You know, as we ramp up our supply, you'll see us more and more widely available. But that takes execution and time. Thankfully, it doesn't take a leap of technology for our product. But it does take time. And that's the only thing that is between us and being more widely available.
And so you have lots of impressive investors from big, big wigs in the tech world. How do you explain their interest? Google Ventures, Bill Gates, how do you explain their interest in Impossible Foods?
These folks that are investors are advocates for consumers having another great choice. It happens to be through innovation and technology, but also care deeply about how we sustain the planet that we live in.
The biggest threat to our climate and ecosystems is animal agriculture. Our production process uses 1/20th the land area, uses 1/4 the water, and 1/8 the greenhouse gas emissions. To put that in more familiar terms, if you choose a 1/4-pound Impossible Burger instead of a 1/4-pound burger made from a cow, you save greenhouse gas emissions equivalent to what you would emit driving 18 miles in the average American car. That's 1/4-pound burger.
We do our jobs right, our impact will be seen from space. And that's exactly how big the opportunity is. It's such a large category of food, this meat that we're going after in dairy, and the consumption of resources associated with it today needs to be improved. The profile of the Impossible Burger is just an example of how creating a delicious product has the extra benefit of transforming the world.
Good. I want to go there.
So what do you think? You thought it looked delicious, right?
It looks delicious. What does it taste like?
I thought it tasted good.
Beef.
But
you haven't had a burger in 10 years. You're the wrong person. Kara, Kara, you've had a burger in 10 years, right? You eat meat.
Yeah.
I do. I love meat.
What'd you think?
It was pretty good, actually. I was surprised.
She said it was soft, though.
Yeah, it reminded me more of bison meat. I've had, a bison burger before, and it's a little bit softer texture. But it tasted like beef.
I'm sure they could make it chewier.
Yeah.
So now, the thing that interests me was the hemi.
Heme. Like hemoglobin.
Okay, H-E-M-E.
Yes, so this was a Stanford, engineer. He got into the lab. He took apart, he looked at what blood was made of. And they call it plant blood, but it's just
engineered blood. They tried to duplicate hemoglobin, blood.
Yeah.
And that's the juice in the burger. And it's true, if a burger's dry, and that's one of the problems with veggie burgers, is they're kind of dry, and they don't have that juice dripping down your chin that you're looking for.
And also, a lot of veggie burgers are quite bad for you because they put a lot of fat in there to try and simulate that thing.
How much fat is in this?
I don't know. It's coconut fat. There's no cholesterol at all. Like, that's the difference. I don't know what
it's
the
a vegetable
exact
fat.
But, it's not for me. So there we're looking at the nutrition facts. It looks like 11 grams of fat.
Bad.
It's not, it's not for me. I'm used to eating veggie
That's
burgers.
That's a lot of sodium.
Yeah.
You know who, this is what we've got to do. And by the way, they're smart. They're not offering it in grocery stores yet, only in high-end restaurants. That'll give it the cachet. If you get somebody like Tracy Desjardins, you get her... It's a vegetarian restaurant.
No. Jardiniere isn't.
Oh, it's not.
No.
But if you get her to serve it in her high-end restaurant, that's going to add a little cachet. Mm-hmm. But I want to take our 13-year-old son. Because anywhere we go, it's a burger. Mm-hmm. If he, and I'm not going to tell him, if he eats it and says, no, that was okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, lying to your kids is always the best.
Jardiniere and Coxcomb in San Francisco.
Coxcomb is a meat restaurant, and then Crossroads is the vegetarian restaurant.
That's kind of mean to bring him to a meat restaurant and make him eat that.
Coxcomb is a very environmentally friendly meat restaurant.
Mm,
they use the whole cow or the whole animal. That's their thing, to the sustainable beef.
Crossroads Kitchen in L.A. and Momofuku Nishi in New York City.
So, their argument is, here are these famous chefs. If you're a foodie, you recognize these names. And if they're going to put these on their menu, then, it's not just some other thing I saw at Whole Foods. It's probably going to taste like garbage.
Is it expensive?
I think the burger's around $20 now, but...
You know, like I said, because I asked this question too. Like, if, you know, if you know, people eat at McDonald's, not because it's delicious, but because it's cheap.
Yeah.
And so everybody, you know, if we're really going to make, you know, if our difference is really going to be seen from space, mm-hmm. as he says, it's going to have to be cheaper. And then that's what I asked him. And, you know, he said in the future it will be.
I mean, they've already made burgers out of vat-grown meats, but they cost about $100,000. Per burger.
Yeah.
So it's not even remotely.
It doesn't. Sergey Brin is a big investor in this.
Exactly. Yeah. But it's phenomenally expensive. If they can get it down to this kind of price now.
All this stuff costs money at first.
Yeah. And then the price will hopefully drop down. And because you're right, the environmental impact of eating meat is very high, but it's delicious.
and it's steeped in our memories, too, right? You know, the smell. They also engineered the smell. And we remember that as children. Like,
so it actually smells like a burger.
Yes, it smells like, you know, and kudos to Kara for filming this, because she, like, knocked that famous chef right out of the...
Were you hungry?
That's
good. That's a good sign,
to get
too.
In there and see the sizzling, like, you know, bleeding burger, which... probably sounds gross to a vegetarian.
Wait a minute, Becky. Oh, Becky, no, don't. She's eating the blood.
Yeah, she said it tasted like blood. I don't know.
Well, how does she know that?
That's a really good question.
Is it irony?
Irony, yes. Minerally, she said.
Interesting.
Yeah,
interesting.
Okay, that's kind of disturbing next time I want to share with her. You just sit over there, shall we?
I'm just saying, she hasn't aged in 20 years. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the secret is. But...
maybe heme, maybe blood. I don't know.
Well, thank you for taking that assignment and doing it. I think it's very interesting. I kind of want to try it now.
Well, you can at Jardiniere Coxcomb. Yeah.
Megan Maroney, on iOS Today on Monday,
mm-hmm.
we are going to do each of our top five iOS 10 tips. The hidden tricks. I'm excited.
Mm-hmm.
You sent me yours. I got some that you haven't even heard of.
Oh, awesome.
Very excited. All right, that's coming up. In just a bit, we're going to take a call for help, Ian.
Mm-hmm.
But first, I want to tell you about ZipRecruiter. If you're the person in your business who does the hiring, hey, bully for you. That's the most important job in a business, right? The person who hires. I mean, after all, a company, which is one of the great inventions of the industrial era, the idea of getting a bunch of people together, aligning on a mission, and creating something that one individual couldn't do is amazing. But it lives or dies by the people who make up that company. And hiring the right person can take your company to the moon. Hiring the wrong person can really bring you down. That's why ZipRecruiter is fantastic. If you're doing the hiring, your goal should be to find the perfect person, the best person, the right person for that job. That means getting the job listing out to the largest number of people possible, sorting through it efficiently, and really drilling down to get the right person. And ZipRecruiter does all of that. First of all, when you post on ZipRecruiter, you're putting your posting, your listing, on more than 100 job boards and social networks like Facebook and Twitter with one click of the mouse. Now, that sounds scary, right? Because, well, by the way, you're also matching it to 6 million plus resumes they already have on file, because lots of job hunters come to ZipRecruiter.com too. So you're going to get instantly, like lots of people within 24 hours, the candidates will be rolling in. And the scary part is, are they going to call you? No. Are you going to get them in your email box? No. ZipRecruiter has its own interface. All the applicants roll into that. You can customize questionnaires for the applicants with either free form or multiple choice or yes-no formats that will help you screen those candidates fast, eliminate any candidates that don't work, find candidates in any city, any industry, anywhere in the country. And then you narrow them down, you rank the people who remain, and you hire the right person fast. More than when we started doing these ads, it was something like 200,000 people had used ZipRecruiter. Now it's more than a million businesses. More than a million businesses. Most of the Fortune 500, we use ZipRecruiter. I want you to try it yourself. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/twit. It's absolutely free for the first 4 days. That's plenty of time to hire the right person right away. ZipRecruiter.com/twit. Really, really works. Try it free right now. ZipRecruiter.com/twit. We thank them for supporting the new screensavers. Ron Richards has a great tip. We're going to go do some questions, some calls for help. But first, Ron Richards will help you take back that maybe ill-advised email, that middle-of-the-night thing. Watch.
Hey, I'm Ron Richards, co-host of All About Android here on the Twit Network, and I've got a little bit of a Gmail tip for you that you might not be aware of. If you're a user of Gmail as your main email server and application that you use, have you ever been in a situation where you've sent an email and you wish you could have not sent it? You accidentally hit send, or you wrote the wrong thing, or you spelled someone's name wrong. It's happened to me. There's a secret function in Gmail. It's actually not that secret, but if you're not aware of it, it's going to change your life. I've got Gmail open up here on my laptop. I'll show you here in the settings. And if you scroll down in the main general tab, there is a function called undo send. All right, just think about those words, undo send. So by clicking that, you enable the ability to undo a send, and you can choose what your cancellation period is. You can choose 5 seconds, 10 seconds, 20 seconds, or 30 seconds. I always go for 30 seconds because I want the maximum amount of time. Once you save this, every time you send an email, once you hit send, the email won't actually send until 30 seconds has passed. What Gmail then does is that after you click send, you'll get a little yellow bar along the top that says undo send. And if you've accidentally sent the email, or you realize you spelled someone's name wrong, or you realize that you're very angry and you really shouldn't have sent that email, you can quickly hit undo send. It will pull it back into the compose window, and the person that you were sending to will never be the wiser. Now, it's important to know that 30 seconds is a hard 30 seconds. So if you're 35 seconds or a minute later, it's going to send whether or not you want it to or not. That's why I changed the option from 5 seconds to 30 seconds, because 5 is just not long enough. But also, if you're in Gmail and you click away from the message, if you go into your archive, or if you start writing another message as well, you lose the ability to click the undo there. So be wary of that. But in the case of making a tragic mistake, you've sent a curse-laden email to your boss and you really regret it, now you have the option to pull it back before they actually get it. So use undo send in Gmail, have a little more control over the emails you send, and avoid any drastic mistakes. So I'm Ron Richards. You can catch me on All About Android every Tuesday on Twit Network. I'll see you next time.
Woohoo! Thank you, Ron. Ron Richards from All About Android.
I would say always set for the maximum 30 seconds, because it'll take you that long after you sent it. Just like, no, okay, that's wrong.
If you use Outlook in an Exchange server, I think you can. So a lot of people in business have the experience of being able to retract emails. Mm-hmm. And then they get home and they send emails and they say, okay, well, how do I take that back? And you, no, you can't.
Yeah. An editor I used to work with had a horrific experience where a reader had written in to complain. He'd written this long sort of email explaining why they'd done what they'd done. And he hit send, and then he had that oh, bugger moment, because he'd realized instead of putting regards, he'd done retards, and it was just like completely destroyed the whole point of the apology.
No, that's not bad. Although I have to say, my policy in general is to, you get an email, write the heated response,
mm-hmm.
write it, and then look at it, and then delete it.
Yeah,
I like to write get it out of your system, and then say, yeah, but I'm not going to send it. It's not so bad to do that.
No.
Yeah. Don't press. Always think twice. Yes. Always before pressing the send button, please. We got a call for help. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Jim is on the line from Pittsburgh, PA. Hello, Jim.
Hey, guys. Hey, Leo. Nick.
Great to talk to you. How are things in Pittsburgh?
It's doing all right. Doing all right.
Yeah? Yeah. We have a good friend in Pittsburgh. Several. Justine Azarek. Hi, Justine's from Pittsburgh. And Alex Lindsay's also from Pittsburgh.
That's right. Yeah.
So what can we do for you?
Hey, I want to give a shout out to my wife. She's the reason for my call. We're going on a cruise for our 25th anniversary, and I don't want to get hit with crazy cell charges. And used to be able to take a cell phone, put it into airplane mode, and just turn on Wi-Fi, and everything was good. Today, with my new iPhone, for example, I put it in airplane mode, and I turn on Wi-Fi. I can still get calls.
Yeah.
So I just want to know what's going on, and I don't want to see like crazy charges.
Don't blame you. It's very, very simple. By the way, that's Wi-Fi calling, and some carriers allow Wi-Fi calling. That's why you're still getting calls. But the key is not to go into airplane mode. It's very simple. If you go into your iPhone settings and you look at cellular, there's only one switch you really need to hit, and that is cellular data roaming. That's the thing that costs a lot of money, is data roaming. So here's the cellular data options, and just turn off roaming. That means everything will work as normal in the United States when you're on your regular carrier. The minute you get overseas, it'll stop working. Your data will stop working. Wi-Fi will work. Mm-hmm. Calls will continue to work. Texts will work, but you won't be spending exorbitant amount of money. It's easy to do with data roaming. Now, I just came back from a similar trip. Where are you going on your cruise?
The Bahamas.
Oh, nice. So I just got back from a cruise, 10 countries in 12 days. And I brought, as an experiment, two things. I had the iPhone on the T-Mobile network.
Right.
And I had a Google Fi phone. Both these companies say, we're going to handle international data. Google Fi says, in almost any country that we've got a relationship with, and that's, all, I think, 119 countries, something like that, it's just going to be like normal. You'll pay your normal data charges, 10 bucks a gigabyte. You'll get unlimited international texting, and you'll pay 20 cents a minute for phone calls, which is more expensive than at home, but still enough to make a five-minute call to the kids and see if everybody's... And that's a buck. No big deal, right? T-Mobile's a little different. T-Mobile, you don't do anything. And they say, we're going to give you similar deal, 20-cent calls, unlimited text, and slowed down data in the same group of countries, most countries, everywhere in the Bahamas, I'm sure, but you should check before you leave. Now, the nice... So I tried both Fi and T-Mobile, and T-Mobile actually was a little bit faster in many cases.
You see, that surprises me, because Project Fi uses T-Mobile and Sprint's
network. The problem is it's probably almost always T-Mobile.
Yeah, I guess so.
Or Three when they're in the UK. They have a deal with Three as well, which is partially owned by T-Mobile. Yeah. So I was very surprised, because I expected Fi to be my go-to phone, because then I'm just going to use it like my regular phone. You have to, by the way, to use Google Fi, you have to subscribe. They have to become your phone company, and you have to use a Nexus or Pixel phone.
Yeah.
So there's kind of a limited market for that one. T-Mobile's great. Now, who's your carrier, though, Jim?
AT&T.
AT&T is the next best. Actually, Sprint's the next best, because they have a One World package that's very similar. AT&T, you buy packages of data, and it's expensive. Verizon's the worst, by the way. Verizon's $25 for 100 megabytes is ridiculous. AT&T offers packages as large as 800 megabytes, but that's going to cost you $150. It's expensive.
I don't generally recommend
using AT&T's system of international calls. I think what you should do is exactly what I just, what I suggested, which is turn off the cellular roaming, data roaming. That's the expensive thing. And use Wi-Fi. When you're in the hotel, you'll have Wi-Fi, coffee shops. I'm not sure about the Bahamas. Bahamas Wi-Fi might be a little bit more spotty. The ship probably has Wi-Fi.
Well, there's some submarine cables going past there, so it's possible they actually get decent speeds.
Yeah, actually, NASA, I remember we were in NASA, they wanted to be a data haven, like much like they were in the pirate days. They were a pirate haven. They wanted to be a data haven, so they did wire it up, so they might have actually decent speed. Your ship, what's the cruise line you're on?
Royal Caribbean.
There's the good
Harmony of the Seas.
They have excellent Wi-Fi. They have a new technology... I think they call it Zoom or Voom or something like that, where they have a satellite dedicated to the Harmony. I was on Anthem, and I was really blown away. It was speed as fast as at home. Okay. So you're in good shape. Turn off roaming. Use the Wi-Fi, shipboard Wi-Fi, to download maps. Google will now let you do that, right? Maps of the region you're in. Do all the Voom. There it is. Do all the information that you know, all the stuff you would normally do. And then you'll have that data on the phone. And you might buy a 250 megabyte international package just for emergencies.
Yeah.
Like, I'm wandering around NASA and I'm lost and I need to get back to the ship before 5 o'clock before they sail. Quick, now I wish Google Maps would work. It's nice to have that for emergencies.
Yeah.
So that's the solution. You could also get a T-Mobile SIM and put that in your AT&T phone, and that would work, by the way.
Okay.
So that's another way to do that.
But yeah, do they charge an arm and a leg for Wi-Fi on these cruises? Or
yeah, it's very expensive.
Yeah, that was brutally honest. Right?
It's quite pricey. It ends up being more than a hotel, and they limit you. Yeah, which is already exorbitant.
Grief.
And they limit you. You know, you can buy one, two, or three devices. They limit the device. It's tied to that device. And I think it was, I can't remember, $20-$25 a day. It was fairly expensive.
But on the plus side, you know, it's your 25th wedding anniversary. You're not going to be spending a lot of time online.
One hopes. But that's what we did. We bought it, I think, for one or two devices, and then we had an iPad and a phone or something like that. But the good news is, amazing ship, and you're going to have it. And Voom is an amazing internet service. RCI has an exclusive on that right now, but it gives me high hopes in future, because normally cruise internet's terrible. So it might be a possibility. Get a temporary T-Mobile account. Pop that SIM in. Your phone number will change, but at least you'll have data on that one phone.
Yeah.
Okay.
Appreciate it, guys.
Hey, congratulations, Jim.
Yeah. Have a really great time.
Thank you. 25th anniversary. That's marvelous. Yeah.
Grief. It's the same age as me. It's Adam's 25th, and you're like,
well, you're a newlywed, right?
4 years, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yes, that's...
Someday. Do you want to do another one?
Sure. Yeah, why not? Let's do it. Always good fun.
Well, we've never done two in a row, but I just have a feeling. All right, let's do another call for help. This time we're going down under. Michael's on the line from one of my favorite cities. Look at that view.
Oh, wow.
Sydney, Australia. Hello, Michael.
Springtime in Sydney. Right.
Hello, Leo.
Great to see you.
It's an honor to finally speak to you after so many years.
We didn't meet up at Hart's Pub when we were down there a few years ago.
No, we didn't.
I fell in love with Sydney. Of course, it was Melbourne Cup Day, so everybody was inebriated. Right? Am I wrong? It's kind of a national holiday.
It's a very big day in Australia. Yeah, it's coming up, actually.
I know. It's fun. What can I do for you?
I don't trust all these cloud services. You know, I've been using these cloud services, but I just have had enough.
You mean like Dropbox and like that?
And iCloud and all that.
Yeah.
And I really just want all my files in one central location, but I have absolutely no trust in these cloud services. Dropbox was recently broken into.
Mm-hmm.
They're so ephemeral. They're making you change your passwords. If you go away for 6 months on a cruise, you come back and say, well, is everything going to be still there? You know, they're just not trustworthy. So I really want my own cloud device, probably at my home, but has very secure offsite backups, some sort of web access, very, very reliable, a RAID device or something like that, but essentially my own cloud device. I've got Time Machine and Time Capsule, but that's not very good because every 6 months it says the backup is corrupt. Yeah. So, oh, well, that's good.
You came to the right place because I actually do this, and kind of the same thing. I was a little worried after all these breaches. Now, you've got a commercial service that is secure.
Spider Oak, yeah, as recommended by Edward Snowden. So Spider Oak is actually, they're encrypted. It's encrypted in such a way that Spider Oak themselves can't decrypt it. So it's entirely down to you to remember your password.
That's the key, is trust no one encryption, right?
Exactly.
And Steve Gibson says, for instance, if you're going to use Dropbox, that's fine. If you encrypt it on your computer and then upload it to Dropbox, then they can't unencrypt it. Spider Oak kind of works that way. The last time I used it, I had a Java client I wasn't crazy about.
Yeah.
I think they have native clients now.
Yeah, and they're improving the service. But, I mean, it's one of those things where you just don't want to dump. As you rightly point out, there have been many cloud firm break-ins, and you don't want to be dumping unencrypted data on there that anybody can scoop up, particularly, as you say, if you're looking to get all your personal data into a particular service. So be really careful about that.
But Michael does have a reasonable concern. What if they go out of business?
Yeah.
And you're right. Even Google, even Apple, you can't be sure that 10 years from now that's going to be safe. So I do what you talked about. I run my own cloud storage solution. And there's a number of ways to do this. There is an open source solution that is for the true geek. And it's called, well, it was originally called OwnCloud. And then there was a schism. And the developers of OwnCloud left and started NextCloud. And actually, I don't think it matters which you use. They're compatible. And they're very much like Dropbox. There are OwnCloud / NextCloud clients for every platform, iOS, Android. So it works in the same way Dropbox does, but instead of being on somebody else's hard drive, you're on a hard drive at home.
Interesting.
You can even install it on, say, using FreeNAS or FreeBSD on a ZFS-based server. And then you also have data integrity because ZFS does two very important things. One, it makes sure that data is not corrupted. It uses a checksum at all times. But like a lot of COW systems, it also has ability to snapshot and restore. And if data corruption happens, it's remarkable, really. It will it's a modern operating system. So running, I think, NextCloud on a ZFS system would be a great way to go. Now, that's one thing. And, you know, I have a NextCloud server, but here's one problem. Since I set it up, I forgot the password.
Ah!
So, So,
this is why you always write your passwords down and hide them in inaccessible places.
I have to go home now because I own the server. Obviously, yeah. I can log in onto the server. I could probably SSH into the server as well. So if you're kind of a geek and you're used to managing your own servers, mm-hmm. You're willing to buy dedicated hardware, your internet service provider doesn't forbid it. This is important, and I don't know what it's like with Telstra or whoever you have in Australia. But here in the United States, I had to buy a Comcast business account and pay extra for a dedicated static IP address in order to do this. And so that, because there, it says in the terms of service, you may not run a server on a Comcast consumer account. So a lot of ISPs prevent this on consumer-grade accounts. Depends on your ISP. You could inquire.
Right.
There are ways around the static IP address, and this is another solution that is a lot easier to set up and I really like, called Sandstorm, sandstorm.io. If you're interested, another open source solution. Sandstorm is more than just cloud storage. The idea is it's cloud services. So you can even get the kind of services you might get from Google, like shared editing, or a you could create your own Git server on this. Each one of these is called an app. The downside is you can only use apps that have been modified to work on Sandstorm. They use Angular.js, so it's not so hard to port, but they do have to be ported. And there's quite a few file storage solutions. I use one called Davros, D-A-V-R-O-S, that is OwnCloud compatible. So I can use an OwnCloud client on my phone to share the data. This is what my Sandstorm server looks like. I'm on it right now.
Davros.
Isn't that an interesting name?
Someone's a Doctor Who fan.
Yeah. So I have a couple of Davros. I use a GitLab, which is a GitHub a Git service like GitHub, to store my .dot files. For instance, .dot files are a good example of files you probably don't want to store on a public server because it has. I don't know why it's so slow. My server's a little slow right now because it has personal information like passwords.
Sounds probably
in
gaming
it.
At the
moment. Yeah. I also use Davros to share. Sound files with the radio stations that I work with. These are all called grains. And what's neat about Sandstorm, it has additional encryption built in. So it has very good, strong encryption built into Sandstorm. So even if somebody were to steal my server from my house...
Your data's still safe.
My data is absolutely integrity. And Sandstorm provides, through the Sandcats.io site... HTTPS. You don't have to have an SSL certificate. You could buy one if you wanted. You'd need a wildcard cert. Those are expensive. But I am, if you look here, by going through sandcats.io, I am on an HTTPS secure client. So it's encrypted in place and encrypted in transport. You could have a WordPress blog. There's wikis. I'm using Etherpad. You could use that as a collaborative document service. I have an Evernote's another example, something you might want to replace. I have an Evernote replacement notebook. You can even store music on here and play it back. I'm not sure what's going on.
No, come on. The RIAA will come after you. Just not even thinking about that.
It's a little slow right there. We go. So I've stored some music on here, and I can actually stream it directly from my Sandstorm server. This is coming off of a Linux box in my house. So Nextcloud or OwnCloud running on FreeNAS or maybe FreeBSD with ZFS would be the kind of like the super pro way to do it. Really powerful, really good. If you've been a sysadmin or you're comfortable with Unix, that would be the ideal way to go. A little bit easier to set up Sandstorm. And I've actually been thrilled with the capabilities of it. Not quite as powerful, but certainly secure.
That's fantastic. Thank you.
Yeah, a couple of really good solutions. And then most people, there are really disadvantages to having your own server. Like I said, you have to get the cooperation of your ISP. You have to worry about IP addresses.
And also what happens if your house burns down.
Stuff like that.
Always think about the worst thing.
Well, OwnCloud and Nextcloud, you can have synchronization. Yeah. You can use rsync to synchronize with work. There's all sorts. If you really want to get sophisticated, you can run something easily as sophisticated as Dropbox, maybe even more so. Mm. The nice thing about OwnCloud is that as an open standard, and so there are a number of clients available on Android, iOS, and elsewhere that work with it. Okay. So that's nice. It gives you lots of synchronization capability. You have to do everything in the web with Sandcats, but everything has a web browser, so that's not too big a deal. All right. Anything questions, Michael?
That's fantastic. I didn't realize it was so available. I was been looking around. I hadn't heard these solutions.
Yeah.
I didn't think the problem had been solved, but clearly
it it's very solved because you're not alone. Yeah. Everybody's a little worried about this. And I finally, a couple of months ago, said, you know what? I really need to set up some of these servers and have my own running just in case. You know, I was very worried about here in the United States government spying, but also just can I trust these companies with my data?
There's a reason why a lot of the secure data firms are setting up in Switzerland now because they have very strong data protection.
And I think Spider Oak is in Switzerland.
Also, the Blackphone, they're based in Switzerland. They base their servers in Switzerland and Canada for just that reason.
Silent Circle.
Yeah. Good luck
to you. Nice to talk to you. You're in a beautiful part of the world.
Thank you very much. Yeah. I'll have to come to your new studio one day.
Good. I'll have to come to your house one day. It looks like you've got a...
That is a fantastic view.
Yeah, that's pretty nice, isn't it? Yeah. Thank you, Michael.
Cheers, Mike.
Thank you very much.
Take care. Bye-bye. Hey, next week we're going to talk about Android a little more because Florence Ion, Oh That Flow, is our guest host. If you want to get some tech questions on the air, here's how you can ask them.
Need tech help? The new screensavers are here with answers. Email your tech questions to newscreensavers@twit.tv.
And actually, somebody's saying, well, what do I do if I'm running a Mac? It's very inexpensive. Go to the App Store and buy OS X Server. Right. And that adds similar capabilities to a Macintosh. And I think it's $20. It's not expensive at all.
Good grief, that is cheap for Apple software.
Yeah. Well, it's just basically running on top of OS X, but it gives you some capabilities like web host. It'll actually turn on the web server, a wiki, and I think file sharing as well. I believe so.
Okay.
Yeah. Coming up in just a little bit, we're going to go to the mailbag. We'll go across the studio. Before we do that, though, I want to tell you about Rocket Mortgage. I know you are all geeks, right? You all like doing stuff online. And that's why Quicken Loans, one of the best loan companies in the United States, has set up Rocket Mortgage for people like you who don't want to go in with a box of papers. You don't want to go up into the attic and go through and find your pay stubs and your tax statements. All of it can be done online with Rocket Mortgage. On your phone, on your tablet, you don't even have to get up from the couch. Share pay stubs and bank statements with the touch of a button. And because it's completely computerized, you'll get approved in minutes for a solution that's customized specifically to you, whether it's to refi or to buy a home. I love it on the video and they have on the website at quickenloans.com/NSS. They show a couple looking at a house and saying, quick, we need a loan, and actually applying for and getting the loan while they're at the open house. That's how fast and easy it is. QuickenLoans.com/NSS, Equal Housing Lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030. From Quicken Loans, the new Rocket Mortgage. Go to QuickenLoans.com/NSS, and we thank them so much for their support. The new screensavers. We have magically teleported over to the fire because it's...
I've got to say, if the Pentagon able to hold that technology, you're toast.
It's raining, it's cold.
It's actually warm.
It's a fire. What do you think? It's nice, isn't it? Yeah.
It is.
Yeah, it's good. So, time for the mailbag, ladies and gentlemen. Fire when ready, Gridley. We had mailbag interrupt us, I think. Let's see. Oh, just in the nick of time, a jar of mayonnaise and ketchup to go with our... These are upside-down jars. You don't have these in the UK, do you?
They've actually started introducing to them in the UK.
It's a very strange packaging.
It is. Plus, there's some interesting stuff going around about what's actually in Heinz tomato ketchup, which kind of turned me off it a bit.
What's in it?
A lot of sugar.
Oh, yeah, of course. That's why it's so good. What did you think?
I was hoping, tomatoes, maybe a little bit of sugar, but,
It's sugar sauce. With red coloring.
Call me Mr. Picky, but
All right, yours says two, right?
Yeah.
So mine's number one. Let me start. This is normally I'd let you start, but it's
I gotta
go by the numbers. Patrick, what are some safe practices when it comes to dealing with USB thumb drives? I work at a university where I frequently use different computers in different labs running different, even outdated OSs, but I need to transfer my data off to my own computer. Frequently, these computers are not connected to the network, so I can't use Dropbox. What can I do to safely transfer data from these lab machines to my personal machine. Well, I think Sneakernet's not a bad idea. That's a USB drive.
Yeah, that would work. I mean, your basic raw USB drive is very insecure. I mean, I can remember writing the story about the first piece of malware which targeted USB drives, and now they've all got it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, every single piece of malware has basically got a USB function.
Certainly. Do not pick a USB drive up off the floor or on the ground and use it, because chances are some bad guy has strewn them around. Yeah. There's a very nasty virus called bad USB that can be put in the firmware of a USB drive, which means it's indetectable. It does it. The USB drive will look like there's nothing on it because there isn't. It's in the circuitry. And what's really sad is that even though we've known about this for more than a year, USB drive manufacturers have done nothing to prevent this from happening. You know, the USB drives have EEPROMs in them, electronically erasable, programmable, read-only memories. And they could make them read-only with the firmware, but they don't want to do that because they want, if they make a mistake in the firmware or whatever, they want to be able to reflash those drives. They don't want to have to throw them out.
But also, typically, those drives are made by Chinese manufacturers who are very, very concerned about unit cost. So, you know, they're going to trim everything they possibly can.
I think it'd be cheaper to put in ROMs.
Yeah.
That are burnt, but the problem is if something's wrong in the ROM, you can't fix it. Anyway, but that's neither here nor there. So I guess the thing is buy your own USB drives.
Yeah.
And I get mine. I use SanDisk. I think they're a good company.
SanDisk is where I get my removable storage from as well. It's good. It's reliable. And it carries on working.
Samsung makes very good USB drives with the EVO technology.
They don't burst into flames.
And they don't. There's no batteries. So I use Samsung USB drives as well, and they're very fast. But so if you buy your own drive, now, if you want, you asked what are best practices. I mean,
turn off auto run.
Yeah, but that's not for you. That's for the lab. That's for the computers in the lab, right?
Mm.
You, in fact, best practice would be fill that USB slot with crazy glue and prevent anybody from using USB, because if you bring a USB drive with bad USB on it into the lab, plug it in, you will infect that machine and it will infect every other drive that gets plugged into it. Oh, maybe that's what he's asking. How do I keep my USB disk from getting...
I mean, you buy your own and you'd have to check it every day because bad USB wouldn't work if he's bought his own drive from a reputable manufacturer. But if you're plugging that into five or six computers each day, that's like having unprotected sex with five people a day, which is, you know, fun, but, you know, it's... But you've got to get virus checked each time, so it's a very dodgy system that you've got with USB. Some of these devices from your email are not online, so that wipes out cloud storage.
I think the only way to do it is Now, Samsung does make, and I really like this. This is not going to be a good solution for you, though. A USB, it's not a thumb drive. It's a little small drive. They go up to several terabytes. They're quite big. Right. And they have encryption on them. However, the problem with this encryption is it only works with Windows and Mac, not probably the kinds of Linux computers I would guess your lab has. And it requires a kernel modification on the Macintosh. So the first time you install it on a Windows or Mac machine, it's actually going to put its own driver on there, because that's what it does, uses to unencrypt the drive. So I'm figuring you probably can't modify those lab machines the way that you would your own personal computer. On the other hand, the nice thing about that is everything's encrypted. You plug it in, it runs that special driver software, unencrypts the drive, you can copy stuff, there it is. You can copy stuff over to it. It's their portable SSD. Look at the size of that. It's 3 terabytes.
That's just sick.
I carry a terabyte with me at all times. It's got all my documents on it.
I was just thinking, supposing if he's worried about getting infections from the university's machine or the lab's machines, why not when he comes home and actually installs it on his personal computer, spin up a VM and open it in that? That way, if there are any problems,
then you can
confine it to the VM and then shut the whole thing down.
Yeah, it's really about transmitting an infection from that lab computer to your computer. There is, and Steve Gibson invented this idea, and I think somebody's made it, USB condoms.
No.
I'm not kidding you. And it is a dongle.
I mean, the port's not big enough for a start.
it's basically an intermediate device that you plug your USB key into. And I'm trying to remember how it would work. I guess it doesn't have modifiable firmware.
Mm-hmm.
So when you plug it into an infected machine, the infected machine can't infect the dongle, protecting your USB drive. Now, this was something Steve theorized. I think we saw somebody sent us an email saying, yeah, they're making it, and I've never seen it again. So
that's one of those things. Yeah. Someone had a bright idea.
Oh, there it is. Int3.cc. Thank you. No one in the chat room knew the answer. No one ever knows the answer in the chat room.
I like the chat room.
Isn't that
people.
Great? No, it's no one in the chat room.
Yes, of course, no one.
And
yes,
the number
okay.
three. There it is. Now, whether you're going to trust these guys, but this is SyncStop.com sells it. This is the idea, is that this is kind of an intermediary between you.
Okay.
Actually, it's for a phone, I guess. I don't know.
Might anyway, work, though.
Yeah, SyncStop.com. Interesting. You have a question in your
I have a question indeed, yes. Please help, exclamation mark. I purchased a low-cost HP Stream tablet. Okay, well, that's your first mistake. No, it's a low-cost HP Stream
tablet. $70, wow.
Well, yeah, $70 is a good price. For my son, who is three, it runs Windows 10 really well and was cheap. My son, however, was a bit too smart. He seems to be getting very good at getting into the settings and stuff. He was even able to turn on Wi-Fi and get online.
What? This a is 3-year-old?
This is a talented kid.
What?
So here's my question. Is there a way to lock down Windows? Can it be 3-year-old proofed? I would like to be able to just access a select pre-selected apps. Then when he grows, we can open up more to him. Can you help me? Well, Chad, first off, you've got a budding engineer.
I would slow him
there.
Down. Let him do it, right?
Indeed. But if you're running Windows 10, there are things that you can do that are actually built into.
Are there parental controls?
Yeah, there are parental controls built into the operating system, but they're a little bit controversial. Because Microsoft, I think, since Windows 8, has had parental controls built in. But with this system, you've got to actually sign up your child for a Microsoft account in order to access the parental controls.
But that's how they separate his controls from
exactly.
your controls, right?
So you can sign up for the account, and then you can sort of put various limits on. There's also a whole bunch of third-party software, Custodian, spelled with a Q. Norton do one, which is surprisingly useful as well, which is unusual for Norton software. So, I mean, there are third-party apps. Most of these are you pay for, but there are some free versions which offer a more limited section. The big problem is turning off the internet, because a lot of people assume that because you're dealing with, you know, sort of Windows 10, which always wants to be connected to the internet, you wouldn't dream of shutting it off. But you can do things like time limit and set the time limit down to zero. There are a host of options, but I've got to say, this kid is three and getting that far advanced. Let him run with it, because he obviously knows what he's doing. Or she knows what she's doing. The sex is, oh, no, it is a he. But, you know, it's...
That's fascinating. Three-year-old. Now, I have to say that I'm a little concerned, because it sounds like he doesn't have a Wi-Fi password.
Yeah, that was odd.
So that's the first thing I do, not just for you and your three-year-old, but to protect yourself, you want to turn on Wi-Fi encryption, WPA2 mm-hmm. encryption. Turn it on, use a password, and don't tell the three-year-old the password. There's no way he can get
yeah.
on. And you should have Wi-Fi encryption turned on anyway.
Yeah, there's the days of leaving your hotspots open yeah. is well gone.
You know, when I was a kid and I was little, my parents would spell words so I wouldn't understand what was going
okay,
on.
Okay, yes.
So that's the other thing. Make sure you spell the password. No, that doesn't work. you can. There are other obvious ways. And in fact, yeah. this, as the kid gets older, this will be very useful. Many routers will allow you to restrict access to certain times. I loved turning off the internet on my kids at 10 p.m. saying you got to go to bed. The howls I would hear.
Oh, yes.
So a good router, and we have a number of recommendations, but I use the Asus AC3200. That'll do
yeah.
it. Will allow you to have access control and say, you know, limit the kid or keep the kid offline entirely. One other thing I would suggest is router-based security, OpenDNS at opendns.com.
Yes.
They have a family protection plan. A lot mm-hmm. of schools and businesses use it, where you can do settings, but you do it at the router level. And what you basically, instead of using the regular DNS, you'll use OpenDNS. You can have... Now, maybe a three-year-old's going to be smart enough to change DNS on his tablet, but I'm thinking not. So you could just change the DNS on his tablet. But if you do it at the router level and you password protect the router, then the child will... You can then say, on this computer, turn it off at night, don't let them access this. They have a very granular set of filtration.
Presumably you can do it to different appliances as well.
You can. So you can say this, like grandma's, I mean, pop's computer, that can go to any site in the world. Grandma's computer can go to these sites. The kid's computer can go to these sites. You can really control that. So that's, they call that Family Shield. Same name that the Norton folks use. I don't know if it's related. But that's free. And then if you want to spend a little more money, they have an even more sophisticated filtering. And I like that because that is happening at the DNS level at the router.
You need
you
to
would have to have a very smart three-year-old to get around that.
You do need to get in at that base level. I'm tremendously suspicious of the internet filtering packages that you see coming through.
I don't like them. And if he's smart enough to work that, he could disable that.
And
right?
go through a proxy service or whatever.
Daddy,
you know.
I noticed the next-door neighbor has Linksys. I've been using that. It's all right. It's all right to use Linksys. He's very smart for a three-year-old.
I've got to say, a three-year-old that can get... I know adults that can't do that, you know? It's just like... Very impressive.
Speaking of impressive, always great to have you on the show. I
always
really
good
appreciate
to be, always good fun to be
Ian
here.
Ian writes at the Register, register.co.uk. He is really great. We have him on all our shows as often as we can, and we've seen him on TNT. You were on Twit last week.
Always, I do love Twit. Yeah.
Love having you on. It's really appreciate it.
A pleasure as always.
Yeah, I'll give our love to your beautiful wife.
I shall do.
Bring her some Marmite. Don't forget, we now have, this is a nice new feature, and I listened to it the other day, I'm loving this, a flash briefing. So if you have an Amazon Echo and you use the flash briefing, you know, you'll say, Echo, good morning, give me my flash briefing. And you can have news and information and weather in there. But go to your app, your Echo app on your phone, enter the flash briefing settings and search for Twit. You can now get a daily update. Monday through Friday, it's TNT, our Tech News Today show with Jason and Megan. They'll give you the latest tech headlines on the weekend. You'll get a feature segment from this show or from Twit. It's a great way to add Twit to your Amazon Echo. So don't forget, you can add it to your flash briefing. Just search for Twit in the Echo application. We also have a great newsletter. If you'd like to know what's coming up in the week ahead, just go to twit.tv/newsletter. Free to sign up. No salesman will call. I promise you we won't use your email address for anything but that newsletter. You have my word on it. twit.tv/newsletter. We do this show every Saturday afternoon, rain permitting, at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time. That's 2200 UTC. Stop by. Join us live and join us in the chat room at irc.twit.tv or even in the studio. We had a great studio audience today. You can email tickets at twit.tv. We'll put a chair out for you. If you can't be here in person or on the internet during our live broadcast, you can always get, for all of our shows, downloadable audio or video, every show we do at our website, in this case, twit.tv/NSS, twit.tv/NSS. And as the man says, subscribe. That way you'll get an episode every week, and that you can do in iTunes or Slacker or Stitcher, Google Music, anywhere you get your podcasts, we're there. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time on the new Screensavers. Bye-bye.